Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's call. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Jeremy Epstein. You may begin.
Good morning and welcome, or good afternoon, and welcome to the NSF webinar on the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Research Initiative Program. I'm Jeremy Epstein, the Deputy Division Director of Computer and Network Systems in NSF's Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate. Participating with me today is Mimi McClure, who is a program officer on the CRII program. We're going to briefly summarize the goals of the program, requirements for eligibility, areas of interest to the program, the submission process, review process, and a few of the frequently asked questions. Everything in this presentation is a synopsis of the solicitation, which has more details. The FAQs, which we just updated and will be posted later today or tomorrow, have many questions and answers. If we don't cover whatever questions you have today, please check the FAQ. If you don't find the answer there, please contact one of us. Our contact information is on the last slide of this presentation on the CRII website, and the slides will also be posted to the NSF website after the conclusion of this webinar. We're going to try to keep this to 1 hour, but we can stay longer if necessary for Q&A. The most important thing is to read the solicitation and then read it again. And you should also read the FAQ, which, as I said, should be posted later today or tomorrow. The goal of this program is to support researchers in the first 3 years of their academic positions. Importantly, the CRII program seeks to provide essential resources to enable early career PIs to launch their research careers. For the purposes of this program, SIES defines essential resources as those that A, the PI does not otherwise have, including through organizational or other funding, and B, are critical for the PI to conduct early career research that will enable research independence. In particular, this program is not appropriate for PIs who already have access to resources to conduct research. Eligibility for this program has been the number one question asked since the program began. In short, there are three parts to eligibility. First, you must be in the first 3 years of a tenure track or research science or education position or equivalent, not a postdoc or research associate, at a university or 2 or 4 year college. Your primary appointment must be in an area supported by SIES. Computer science, information science, electrical engineering, computer engineering being the most common, but not exclusive. For example, you could be in a mechanical engineering department if your research is in the computing aspects of robotics or smart cars. Positions in government or industry do not count against the 3-year limit. Neither do positions as postdocs or research associates. However, academic positions held overseas, whether tenure track or not, tenured or not, do count towards the 3-year limit. The second eligibility criteria is you must be no more than 5 years since your PhD, not counting family or medical leave. The third part of eligibility is that you have not received any grants from NSF or other agencies in the PI role. Being in the co-PI role does not disqualify, nor do any of the other types of any of these other types of NSF grants shown on the slide. Additionally, awards from your university or contracts from a company or private foundation do not disqualify. Note that if you have a collaborative NSF grant, the lead PI from each institution is considered a PI, so even being the PI from a non-lead institution would disqualify. The two questions in determining eligibility are, one, where does the money come from, and two, what is your role? The amount of money involved does not matter, be it small or large. Note that the rule is as of time of award, not as of time of submission. So if your proposal is selected for an award, the NSF program officer will ask you to certify that you have not received any disqualifying grants. As I said earlier, this program is open to faculty doing research in any of the areas supported by SIES. This slide lists the current SIES programs that are accepting CRII submissions. your proposal must list at least one program which is relevant to your research proposal. Descriptions of each of these programs can be found on the NSF website. Please strictly follow the solicitation guidelines for titling your proposal. Step two, the most important thing to do is read the solicitation and then read it again. Yes, this is a repeat. We really want to stress that. As described in the solicitation, proposals are limited to 10 pages, not the 15-page limit typical for most NSF proposals. We're not going to review the rules for fonts and margins. Please see the NSF Proposal and Award Policies and Procedures Guide, also known as PAPG, for instructions. Trying to squeeze in more text by reducing fonts or margins is not only frustrating to reviewers, but it's also likely to have your proposal returned without review. A few other points on submissions. No co-PIs or other senior personnel are permitted. However, consultants and subawardees are allowed. The proposal must be for no more than $175,000 and for exactly 2 years. No more, no less. You may only submit one CRII proposal per year. A common question is whether a PI may submit both a CRII and career proposal at the same time. The answer is no. The data management plan is required to be submitted as a supplementary document in Fastlane. If you have included postdocs in your budget, you must also have a one-page postdoc mentoring plan submitted as a supplementary document. Your proposal must include a letter from your department chair certifying that you meet the eligibility requirements, including that you meet the criteria of time from PhD within 5 years and time of hire, no more than 3 years as of submission deadline. The budget is intended to be spent mostly on students, including both undergraduates and graduates. Some fraction may go to specialized equipment, such as unique hardware or software needed for research. Some travel funds are expected. As noted, the total must not exceed $175,000. REU supplements can also be requested for CRII awards following standard NSF policies. Proposals will be reviewed using the standard NSF merit review process, which will include consideration of both intellectual merit and broader impact. Unlike career proposals, there is not a specific educational component required. Factors that will be considered in the review process include relevance to one or more of the size programs, as mentioned on the previous slide, the appropriateness of the research to a two-year window, the potential to produce sufficient preliminary research to help you prepare for other research awards, such as career, and whether the activities are appropriate to help you achieve research independence. Step three, the most important thing to do is read the solicitation and then read it again. Thanks for participating in this webinar. We hope the CRII program will enable new faculty members to initiate independent research through funding, students, and related support. The slides and audio will be posted to the SIES website in the next few days. And as a reminder, proposals are due August 14th. And I believe the email addresses and URL for the video and audio are on the screen now. If there are any questions, operator, would you please open the telephone line?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, for our first question.
Nobody wants to be first. How many people do we have on the phone?
Our first question is from Mr. Ho. Your line is open.
Good
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. So my name's Ken Chiu, and I'm from I'm new faculty in the Oklahoma State University. And I just have a quick question. So I noticed there's a rule about 10-page limits in the proposal section. So I was wondering if the reference section, the reference of all the referred and citation papers, would that count into the 10-page limits?
As with all NSF proposals, the references list is not part of the page limit.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Drew Davidson. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. So I was wondering, I noticed on one of the slides it mentioned that the CRII is only open to people that don't have resources elsewhere. And I was wondering if startup budget contributed towards that.
So one of the questions in the new FAQ that you have not been able to see yet is actually question number two is directed specifically at that. So since you haven't seen it, I can't say you should have read it, so I'll read it to you. I have a startup package from my organization. Does that mean that I have essential resources and am therefore ineligible? Does that sound familiar? The answer is, the CRII program aims to support at least one full-time graduate student per year for 2 years. Historically, some CRII PIs have budgeted for two students for 2 years, except for PIs at RUIs, Research for Undergraduate Institutions, a very important investment for early career researchers in academia to help generate early research results or establish feasibility of future research. To be eligible for CRII, the proposer's level of organization or other means of support must be insufficient to achieve this level of graduate student support, and the combined level of organization and other support, together with CRII request support for graduate students, must not exceed this level. In addition, early career PIs whose organizational or other support is conditional upon not receiving any extramural funding should consider those resources in hand for the purposes of assessing eligibility. You should support your eligibility claim with an appropriate justification in your proposal, and your department chair should attest to the validity of your justification. So in addition to what I just read, I want to also clarify that when we say organizational or other means of support, that means other things such as funding from government agencies like DARPA or Department of Energy. It could also include any gifts from industry or from foundations or from your university.
Okay, I see. So if I have some combined lump sum of money for my startup that includes everything, if I could say, like, well, there was no way to fit a graduate student into that, it would be enough. But if I could not make that claim that I could fit a graduate student into that, then I would be ineligible. Is that right?
You would need to justify it, and that sort of a description would be the way that you would justify it. And then your department chair's letter would need to attest to the validity of that statement.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That answers my question.
Sure. And for the record, that was what I was expecting the first question to be. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Valerie.
Our next question is from Mr. Sahu. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Abhimanyu Sahu from Oklahoma State University. So my question is the eligibility again on the timeline of 3 years. So it's by the due date. As for the solicitors here, so the due date is August 14th, and that's the last day of my 3 years. Am I still eligible for this time?
You know, we've had many questions. I don't think I've ever had one where it's been that day. It's been, you know, a week later. But I think that if it's that day, we will allow it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Nagas. Your line is open.
Hi. I just wanted to make sure that the eligibility criteria for the years after finishing your PhD is the actual time that you got the certificate rather than the actual time that you defended your PhD?
Correct. It's when you actually received, when the degree was conferred, not when you did your defense.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Mr. Amani. Your line is open.
Hi. Actually, my question is about the conflict between CRII and Career Award. So if for some reason my proposal gets rejected, am I eligible to submit Career Award next summer?
Absolutely. You just can't submit them at the same time. But submitting for one does not affect eligibility for the other, except not in the same year.
I see. So by the same year, do you mean academic year or like 2019, 2020, I will be eligible?
Well, the career proposals are due in July, and CRII are due in August. And so we're talking about July, August, which is the same academic year and the same calendar year. So I
makes sense. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Mr. Kumar. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm Pradeep Kumar from William & Mary, and my question is regarding the eligibility for this year. So it might happen that I'll get the PhD certificate by the end of this year because of some issues in my current university, but I will be still joining College of William & Mary in this August. So will I be eligible to submit this year?
So let me repeat what I think you said, just to, rather than saying yes or no, just to make sure I have the scenario correct. Your PhD isn't actually being granted until the end of 2019, but you are starting your faculty position in fall of 2019. Is that the scenario?
Yes.
Okay. So no, you would not be eligible because you have not yet received your PhD as of the due date.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Alexander Nelson. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, Alexander Nelson, University of Arkansas. So my question is on the letters of collaboration, letters of support. Last year, whenever I submitted, one of the questions was kind of around whether or not I had collaborators on it, and I think that I misunderstood the difference between letters of support and letters of collaboration. I was wondering if you could expand on what is and what is not allowed from the collaboration letters, and do they need to be like a rote template, like we plan to collaborate with X?
Okay, so in terms of the difference between a support and a support letter says we think that this is a wonderful person and they do great research. A collaboration letter says we're going to do X, Y, and Z specifically to work with this person on this project, and that X, Y, and Z could be we're going to do this research, we're going to provide this data, we're going to provide this equipment, we're going to provide access to students, whatever it is. But it's specific about what they're going to do to enable the research to go forward. In terms of what the letters look like, Mimi, would you comment on that?
It says describe the collaborative efforts within the project description. In addition, submit brief letters limited to one page or less describing the nature of the collaboration. Letters of collaboration are vital when participating with existing programs or in collaborating with others. The letter should briefly describe how the collaborator would contribute to the project. The specific details of the proposed collaborations should be described in the proposal's project description. The letters of collaboration cannot be used to circumvent the 10-page limit for the project description. Letters of support or recommendation are not permitted. NSF will not consider these during the review process. It's up to the PI to explain what is requested and approach the collaborator in a timely fashion to get these letters before the deadline for submission. Scan the signed and dated letters into the supplementary document section and place them after the departmental support letter. Do not submit any other documentation for the collaborator, such as biographical sketches, appendices, or other NSF forms. You will not be allowed to submit these letters after the deadline date, so please plan in advance.
Thank you, Mimi. Did that answer your question?
Yes, I believe so. Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Our next question comes from Shuai. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for the introduction. And I'm from the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. But my position will start at August 19, which 5 days past the deadline. I'm not sure whether I'm eligible for the CRII.
So you're starting in your academic position on August 19th?
Yes.
You are not eligible. You must be a professor at the university on not later than August 14th when you submit.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for answering. I will negotiate.
Our next question comes from Nika. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Nika Oswald from Cornell University. I wanted to dig a little bit deeper on the eligibility front with regards to having a startup package. I wanted to see, so for example, many startup packages are eligible, are available during a period of 5 to 6 years. I wanted to see this idea of having 2 students per 2 years, is it an absolute or is it amortized? As an example, if I have 48 months of student support over 6 years, does this make me ineligible for CRII or not?
I think that would be something you would want to describe as part of your justification that you have this startup package and it includes this much support over this amount of time and that you're amortizing it and that's how you are concluding that you do not have adequate support. But you would need to explain it, and again, your department chair letter would need to certify that, that your explanation is, in fact, a reasonable way of looking at the startup package.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to add anything, Mimi? No? Okay.
Our next question comes from Elena Glassman. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I've been planning on applying for this program for some time. It sounds like a great program. I'm grateful for the previous caller clarifying that exact, that question of the amortized. So the remaining question I have is in respect to a grant from NASA that I got kind of thrown onto at the last minute. This grant is something where I'm kind of taking somewhat a minor role. It's not something that's like explicitly developing my own kind of lab necessarily, but it does come with some support, you know, some additional funds. It's not within the NSF. So I'm wondering if these kind of eligibility questions about whether or not you are a PI or a co-PI at, you know, one institution or another, like if that is only for NSF grants, or for grants including a company?
I'm going to look that up because I want to make sure I answer it correctly. Do you remember, is the PI rule, is that for NSF only or is that for all awards? My recollection is that it's for all awards as well. Hold on 1 second. Now, I should know this because I wrote the original FAQ, but I believe the answer is here it is. The third part of eligibility is that you have not received any grants from NSF or other agencies in the PI role. So if you were a PI on that NASA grant, then that makes you ineligible. If you're not a PI, but you're a co-PI, senior personnel, whatever NASA calls them, then that would not affect that part of eligibility. So there's as we talked about earlier, there's several different parts of eligibility. So the PI part is either you're a PI, or in which case you're ineligible, or you're not a PI, in which case that's not a problem. The funds that you get from NASA would have to be factored in to the determination of whether you have adequate research support to cover your students and start your research program. We're not going to judge whether that money is going to a specific research topic that's building your research capabilities. We're just saying that's just impossible for us to judge. So we're just saying, overall, do you have enough money to support graduate students, however they're used? Does that answer the question? And Mimi, do you want to add anything?
No, you got it.
You did, with the one caveat that PI, like, I don't know if NASA uses the co-PI language. There's like 30 professors on this grant, of which I am one. And I don't know if that means, that we may all be called PIs, but that doesn't, I don't know if that's what you mean by PI in NSF language.
Well, in NSF terms, the PI is the leader of the project at that particular institution, and each institution has a leader. Typically, they may, if there's subawards, that would be different. But typically, each institution has its own leader. If you're the leader for your institution, then I would say you are a PI or the equivalent of a PI. If there are other members at your institution, typically more senior members, then I would say you're not a PI. I'm not so much worried about the word that's used, the title that's used, as the role.
Got it. Okay, great. Then I would not be a lead PI. Fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks for the question.
Our next question comes from Robin Brewer. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please. Robin Brewer, go ahead, please.
Sorry, I was on mute. Okay, so I saw that most of the funds should go towards a student, but that a postdoc can also be supported. So how could including a postdoc be justified if students should be prioritized?
A postdoc would be common if you're at an RUI institution, for example, where you only have undergraduates. And a postdoc would be necessary to get the quantity of research done. There might also be cases where you might support part of a postdoc along with graduate students, depending on your budgeting availability. Anything you'd like to add to that, maybe?
Nope, you got it.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Laura. Your line is open.
Hello. Thanks for holding this webinar. Well, you essentially already answered the question I had, which was on the acceptable level of support for those of us who have already startup packages. So just to reiterate, if we have student support exceeding a certain threshold, this means we are not eligible anymore. Is that right?
When taken in totality, I don't want to say if you have student support, because you might have some student support but still be eligible. It's depending on the specifics of your circumstances that you would need to, and your department chair would need to attest what that level is.
Right. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Inigo. Your line is open.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for hosting this webinar. My question is also related to the budget. In my case, I'm a research scientist, which means that my salary is not guaranteed by the department, and I need to find grants. I understand that this might fit my profile, but I also understand that the idea is that the budget should be allocated to a graduate student. I think on passing, I saw that there is a limit on the salary that I could assign to as a PI. Can you elaborate on how much, if there's a minimum and maximum of the salary that I can allocate, how much effort should I allocate for a graduate student and how much for my salary, et cetera?
Okay, so the minimum is a half month for you per year of the two-year award. So you need a minimum of 1 month total across the 2 years. There is no maximum specifically on this. There is a general rule at NSF that you can't get more than 2 months in total across all of your awards. There is an exception for people like yourself on soft money positions if you make an appropriate case to the program officer. It's rare, but it is possible to go over 2 months on a single award. Given the $175,000 limit and the requirement that you have at least one full-time graduate student in each of the 2 years, it's going to be pretty hard to squeeze 2 years of a full-time graduate student and more than 4 months, because 2 months per year. It would be pretty hard to squeeze 4 months of your salary and 2 years of a graduate student and whatever overhead your department or your university charges and squeeze that all into 175. So I don't think you're going to be faced with the issue of going over the limit. I think the challenge for most people is reaching the minimum, not the maximum.
I see. And so, for example, if I would get to apply and, let's say, I put 2 months per year for my salary, then that would mean that while I have this award, I cannot be a PI in any other grant. Is that correct?
If you were in a traditional tenure position, that would be correct. But because you're in a soft money position, given an appropriate case, you could get more than 2 months total. So you would be able to apply for other awards.
Okay. So the fact that if I ever get this CRII, the fact that I might become a PI in another project will not disqualify me because I'm not a PI in any other project right now? Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, but I will emphasize that when you go over 2 months per year, there needs to be a justification. It's not automatic, but the justification for someone in a soft money position is not extremely stringent.
All right, thanks.
Our next question comes from Daniel Leidinger. Your line is open.
Hello. Thanks for the webinar. I have my main question was already answered, and that was related to the startup package. But I had another question about summer salary for the students in the budget. When you say full-time PhD student, does it mean during the summer they need to be hired at 100% in the budget?
That's whatever your university defines as full-time.
I see. Okay, thank you. That answered it perfectly.
I would just sort of comment that if your university defines full-time as 1 week a year, that would be a little bit not very believable, but it is generally what your university defines.
Our next question comes from Nathan Dottenham. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you so much. My question's already been answered, and I forgot how to take my question back. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being honest about that. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Marco. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Marco Brunelli from Wayne State University. Actually, partially my question was already answered in previous questions, but it's about the startup package. So I know that what I understood is that CRI is mostly focuses on support for students, but how about like equipment? So say I have a couple of students in my lab, but you know I need to provide them with more equipment to conduct more experiments in relation also to the to my CRI as a business. So how much is the equipment supporting the justification for the...
Yeah, there isn't a hard number. a reasonable amount of equipment, and in particular, if it's specialized equipment. So if you're asking for laptops and printers, that's going to be frowned upon. But on the other extreme, if you're looking for some specialized equipment to control drones and test drones, which wouldn't ordinarily be hanging around, that would be appropriate to include. I would say, I don't know, what do you think, 10, 15% of the budget, something like that?
If you want your own cluster, that's a want, not a need. So right. This is the equipment that you need to start the research and right. Do the research.
Right. Great point. So clusters are a really good example of a bad request, especially because nowadays it's usually more cost-effective to rent the space from Amazon or use one of the NSF programs that provides cloud access at a subsidized rate. So that would not be a good example of equipment. We're really looking for specialized equipment.
But putting in, if you are going to rent space from Amazon, putting that into the budget is completely appropriate.
Yeah. And we both said Amazon, and we should clarify
something
cloud
like
provider.
The cloud provider.
Yeah, we're not specifying Amazon.
So let's say that I want to build some more like mobile robots for the experiment. So that would be good as a justification.
Yes, as long as they're mobile robots and not just Roombas to vacuum up your lab.
Yeah, right. yeah, right. Okay. I have another question. Is that
please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, that's a really quick question. So I recently submitted to another NSF grant, but obviously I still don't know if I will be awarded or not. So as of now, I'm still eligible for CRII. But let's say that, crossing fingers, I get the award after I submitted the CRI. Should I go ahead and withdraw my submission, or that would be automatic?
No, it's not automatic. You would no longer be eligible for the award. You should talk to whoever the program director is that's taking care of your proposal and withdraw it.
Okay.
That is withdraw the CRII proposal. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Our next question comes from Morteza. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. So I think you have already answered my question, but just to make sure that I understand this correctly, that any funding from a private industry, independent of the amount of the funding, it would disqualify me from a CRII?
If you were the PI. If you were not the PI on that award, let me make sure I get this right. I'm sorry. Awards from your university or contracts from a company or private foundation as a PI do not disqualify. I said that wrong. So being a PI on an award from a company or private foundation is not a disqualification. However, the money that you get would figure into whether you need a CRII award.
All right, great, wonderful. Thank you so much for clarification.
Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Spencer Milliken. Your line is open.
Yes, my question has been answered very clearly already. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for telling us.
Our next question comes from Francisco Ortega. Your line is open.
Yes.
Hi, Francisco Ortega, Colorado State. My question is, who makes the determination to what is enough money for the research, meaning, I give the justification, the chair gives the justification, does the reviewer make the determination, or is the program the program director that makes the determination? Who makes the determination?
I think the answer is all of the above. The panelists who review your proposal, or ad hoc reviewers, if we use that, they will be asked to comment on it. The panel as a whole will be asked to comment on it. The program officer makes a determination what she or he thinks, and then it goes to the division director, the deputy division director, someone at my level, who also review that discussion before making an award. So all of us consider it and discuss it before an award is made or before a decision to decline is made. We do have multiple levels of discussion about this topic. And having been through this with many different programs with CRII over some years, I can assure you that this is something that gets lots and lots of discussion before a decision is made.
Okay, thank you. Really, really quick, and to piggyback on the previous comment that you made about the company awards, I did receive some time ago an award from a company, but it was coming from, they had an SBIR. So would that be considered company award, sub-award, or would that be considered that was fair money given that the money came from an SBIR, but the SBIR was...
I don't know, and I think I'd like to take that one offline. I would encourage you to contact Mimi or one of the other program officers with the specifics of that situation and let them discuss that with you offline. That's a fairly unusual case, and I want to make sure we get it right. So sorry for not answering that one directly, but I'm afraid to give you a wrong answer.
You can email me and just give me the specifics, and I'll get with the group, and we'll get back to you immediately.
Our next question comes from Mr. Raziz. Your line is open.
Mr. Raziz, we can't hear you. One last time, Mr. Raziz. All right, let's move on to the next question, please.
Our next question comes from Hannah. Your line is open.
Hello, my name is Hannah Humphrey from University of Kentucky, and I actually want to check on the eligibility for the 3 years on academic position. So before joining the University of Kentucky as an assistant professor, I was a research associate for 2 years. And I know that you mentioned that research associate does not disqualify you, but based on what I've seen from the previous announcement for CRII, I haven't seen the new one yet. But then there is a specific also condition that may disqualify those who have been on research associate positions. So I just want to know if there has been any change to that, because you mentioned research associate position doesn't disqualify you, or it's the same, because it says that if, you know, someone in that position is not permitted by the institution to submit a proposal as a PI, then it doesn't disqualify. While when I was in that position, like using some sort of specific, I don't know, condition, I was able to actually submit as a PI. So I just want to clarify on that.
You want to read the FAQ number 8?
I can read you FAQ number 8. I'm not sure it's going to totally answer your question, but it says, yes, provided you meet all of the CRII eligibility requirements. CRII eligibility is limited to no more than 5 years after official conferral of the PhD, with possible exceptions for family and medical leave. Working as a research associate or other non-academic positions is not disqualifying, so long as the 5-year limit is not exceeded. Time spent as a postdoc fellow does not count towards the 3-year eligibility requirements. Hang on.
But does count against the 5-year limit. Oops, that last sentence should have been deleted. Oops, 5-year limit is not a change from the previous solicitation. Okay. Sorry about that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so it seems that a research associate position does not count towards also the 3 years limit of being in academic position. Because That 5 years will not apply to me because I got my PhD in November 2014, so I think I can still apply.
Yes. Yes. Okay. On the five-year basis, you're clearly okay, and on the three-year basis, the research associates do not count against the three-year limit.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Dean Gerstein. Your line is open.
Thank you. Dean Gerstein at Pomona College, and my question is about FAQ number 2 and startups, and I wonder if you could just translate that probatively with regard to RUI-type institutions.
Good question. So with respect to RUI institutions, we are trying to support you, students, and your students. You would have to still show that you're unable to support students with whatever your startup package is at an adequate level to start a research program. So, given that RUIs obviously don't have graduate students or might have master's students, you would want to show that you can't support enough undergraduates or possibly master's students to start a research program that would be equivalent to supporting a full-time graduate student. I'm not sure that I answered that exactly, but that's sort of I would basically say that if you can argue that you don't have the equivalent capability of supporting a full-time PhD student, then you would have that would be a strong argument that you would be eligible.
Or like Jeremy said earlier, if you need to hire a postdoc to get the research done, you would make that argument.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hiring a postdoc is a tough proposition. That the equivalent that's stated in, not in this particular context, but is stated in the CR, in the RFA, in the PA, is one full-time graduate student or two part-time undergrads, and I'm wondering, is that the kind of straight substitution that you would interpret as applicable to the FAQ number 2 answer?
That's a minimum. That's not a maximum. If you wanted to argue, excuse me, that in order to actually get the research done, you need 4 undergraduates because that's the amount of effort that's required, then that would be, and your department chair will sign off that this is in fact the level of support that you need from students, then that would be I would say you would qualify because we understand that you can't get an undergraduate is not half a graduate student. We understand the difference that we're establishing a minimum, not a maximum, or not an equivalence, I guess I should say.
Not an equivalence.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Wen Jecha. Your line is open.
Hi, my name is Wen Jecha from New Mexico State University. So my question is, so you mentioned about this 3-year qualification. So how many times in total, could we submit in terms of the proposal? And also, the thing is, for example, I joined the university last year, last August, 15, for example, and would this year be counted as my first year or my second year?
So you said you joined August 15th, so this would be your first year because it's been a day less than a year as of the deadline. What was the other part of the question?
How many times?
How many times? I don't recall. Does it still say two?
I don't remember.
I think the solicitation says twice, but I know the solicitation says, and there was a slide that said, read the solicitation. I think that slide is in there three times. I'm almost certain that the solicitation says, and I believe the answer is two, but do go read it before you count on that. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Jay Huang. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, it's me because the name was a bit different. Anyway, my name is Jay Yun from Cornell University. My question is about the selection of research program. So when preparing a cover sheet, then I need to select one program that is related to my research area. And then what I see here is that there are at least two areas that are closely related to my research. So then my question is, then can I select multiple areas or how do I select?
So the first thing I would tell you to do is look at how we fund things, look at the divisions, and then talk to your program director. Find a program director, send them an email, attach a one-page explanation of what you're going to do, and ask them for a time to talk. Because if you give them what you're doing, if you sent it to me, I could write you back and say, this doesn't really fit CNS, it's more IIS or CCF, and here's the person that you should contact. And in the case that it's closely overlapping and really multidisciplinary, we may review it in two different places.
Yeah, you can tag it with two different programs if you want. And I think it's really important to understand that our goal is to use this to help us match your proposal to the best place where you're going to get the best quality reviews. Our goal isn't to use this as a penalty. If you submit it and we look at it and say, no, that's not where this belongs, we will tell you that we're moving it to this other program because we think that it's a better fit. So, let's say you were researching security of drones, and you submit it to the security program, we might look at it and say, no, this is really more on the robotics and drone side, and we might move it to the other side, and we would just tell you we're doing that. We're not trying to penalize you. We're just trying to use this as a first-order sorting because we get hundreds of proposals, and the first-order sorting helps us get them to the right place as quickly as possible. So don't worry that you're going to get hurt if you choose the wrong program. Try to do the best you can, but don't get too upset about that.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mr. Zhang. Your line is open.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead, please.
All righty. Thank you for the webinar. So the question is here. So the 5 years limit for a PhD is strict, right? For example, if,
yes.
All right, sure.
It's absolute.
Yeah, if you got your PhD on August 13th, 2014, you would be ineligible. But if it were August 15th, 2014. If it was August 15th, 2014, you would be eligible, but if it was August 13th, you would not. And we made the determination that if it was an exact match, we would allow it.
So here, I have one thinking for this. So here, this is initial research program should be based on the years, for example, a person graduated maybe 10 years ago, but he was being in industry for 8 years. And he only worked on the academic position for 2 years. I think in that regard, this he's still considered as initial researcher academically, but he got KD many years ago. So why is 5 years so strict?
Well, I'm not going to go into the logic of why we did it other than to say that we are trying to focus on new faculty, junior researchers, and so the restriction is strict that if you are more than 5 years since a PhD, you are not eligible.
Thank you.
And we're almost out of time. Just a reminder that if your question has already been answered, you can press star 2 to take yourself out of the queue. Is that correct, Valerie?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Next question, please. Excuse me.
Our next question comes from Megdat. Your line is open.
Hi. So this is Megdat from Penn State. Thanks for taking time and hosting this event. I also have a question about eligibility. So does research assistant professor count as the 3 years constraint on being eligible?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I had a position of research assistant professor at PTI Chicago, which is not tenure track and it's not postdoc, it's something between. And I was wondering if it counts as 3 years or not.
I see. Okay. So the question is how to count positions that are neither postdocs nor assistant professor. There's a fair amount of text in the solicitation itself that attempts to describe what the characteristics are of a position that counts, and it's has to do with whether you supervise students or not, whether you can submit proposal, whether you could have in that position, submitted or supported students, supervised students, submitted proposals, et cetera. We recognize that this is kind of a gray area, but we tried to define what we mean. So if there's grayness in your job title, it might be something that your department chair letter or the proposal itself might want to address that, in fact, those years were or were not in an equivalent position.
So in the solicitation, it says the position, positions with titles such as visiting assistant professor are considered as postdoctoral appointments and hence not considered against the three-year limit. Only if all the following are true. The position is not tenure track. Someone in that position is not permitted by the organization to submit a proposal as a PI. The position is supervised by another faculty member in a fashion similar to that of a postdoctoral fellow. In this case, the department chair head letter should explicitly describe any such positions and their conditions.
Yeah, that's good. I think I wrote that.
Somebody did that.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
And we reemphasize, please read the solicitation. And for the person that asked about the limit, it is 2.
Okay. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Taeho Zhang. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Taeho from the University of Notre Dame. I have a question about the term exploratory investigation. The announcement says the award will be given to the researchers who will undertake exploratory investigations. So does that mean I am not allowed to have any preliminary data for the research that I'm proposing?
No, to the contrary, you're welcome to have preliminary data. We just don't expect that you necessarily will, unlike in most NSF proposals where you're expected to have preliminary results for CRII. We welcome it, but we don't require it.
Oh, okay. So I feel like you are saying it's actually better to have some preliminary data?
Well, I mean, it always helps because okay. it makes the case that you have that the research is feasible, but we try not to make the bar too high on that because we recognize that many of you who are applying Are this is your new faculty members just having finished your PhD and you don't have that under your belt already?
Okay, yeah, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Ati. Your line is open.
Hi, my question is about letters of collaboration. How important are letters of collaboration, and is it important that the collaborators should be within the U.S.?
Letters of collaboration, it depends what you're relying on them for. If they're going to be doing part of the research or enabling you by providing data or things like that, then they're going to be really important because that's how we know that you have the capability to accomplish it. Is from those letters of collaboration because they say this is what we're going to do. Do they need to be from the United States? No, they could if someone from another country is going to work with you and provide whatever is necessary. That's fine, and sometimes that can even be a benefit to show that you've got international characteristics to your research. Was there something in the FAQ that you wanted to point out on that?
We read it before.
Okay. Thank you so much. And I just have another quick question. Can two people from the same university apply for this grant?
Yes, there's no limit on the number of applications from the same university.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you so much.
How many more questions are in the queue?
We have 5 more questions in queue.
Okay. All right, we'll hopefully get through those and then we'll be done.
Okay. Our next question comes from Amini. Your line is open.
Hi, I have a follow-up question on the number of students that is provided in the startup package. So I have 3 years for 2 students. Can I justify that that's more a teaching assistantship and I need my students to do research? So I would like to apply for this grant because I'm sure there should be a section on justifying how this grant can help me.
I would say that you would want to write and your department chair would want to attest that that is the expectation, is that that funding is going to students to help you with your teaching and not with your research, and therefore you need this additional funding for research. So that would need to be something that you would need to explain and justify.
I see. Makes sense. And how many students maximum I can budget on this project? Can I have undergraduate students as well?
Yes. There's no maximum. There's only a minimum.
I see. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. 4 left. Go ahead, please.
Our next question is from Mr. Duda. Your line is open.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Mr. Duda, go ahead, please.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
Hello. Not me.
Valerie, please go to the next question.
Our next question comes from Fan Yeo. Your line is open.
Hi, Fan Yeo from University of Central Florida. So my question is, if I plan to submit a CRI proposal to a specific program and have some questions relating to their program, who should I contact in their program? I mean, I know there might be multiple program directors in their program.
Well, that's a really good question. You can either, every program has a web page that lists the program officers. My suggestion is you contact one program officer and one program officer only. If you feel the need to contact more than one, put them all on a single email. Don't write to them individually. If you put them all on a single email, then they will know that you're asking the question of the program, and one of them will respond to you. If you send separate emails, then each one of them is going to respond to you, and you're going to waste their time, and you're going to make them annoyed. So pick one person or all of them on a single message.
So basically, we don't have a like some program manager or director in that program that's assigned for CRII responsibility, right?
That's correct. There is no specific CRII program officer per program.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Sure.
Two more.
Go ahead, Valerie.
Our next question comes from Mr. T. Your line is open.
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, I just have a quick question. So our department is undergoing a department head search. I'm just wondering if I ask the current department head to write a letter, would that be an issue if she or he is no longer the department head when I submit the proposal?
No. You could ask the acting department head, the outgoing department head, the dean, and anyone like that in a leadership role.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Last question,
I hope.
Our next question comes from Morteza. Your line is open.
Go ahead, please.
Hi. So I have a just quick question that from like this CRII submission, can they be in the form of this goalie submission that is in a form of like a partnership with the industry, but of course it's limited to a one PI. But then how we can show their kind of a collaboration or their support, would that be in the form of a letter of a collaboration or letter of a support?
Well, it needs to be a letter of collaboration that's specific, that says we at XYZ company are going to do this to support the research. If it's just a letter that says we think it's important research, we're going to throw it out. So you need to make sure that it is specifically saying we're going to help with the research by providing data, by providing people, by providing equipment, whatever they're going to do. If that exists, that is very helpful. That strengthens the proposal. But if it just says we think it's important or we think he's a great researcher, then that's a negative.
I see. And then do you kind of suggest that, I mean, in terms of this, like, industrial kind of a goalie submission, would that be suitable for a CRII submission, or it's something discouraged?
I'm sorry. I missed that you had mentioned goalie originally. I don't know.
Goalie is written into the solicitation, but it's really hard to do in a CRII and in 2 years.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, if you have specific questions about goalie, you should talk to whoever the program officer who's handling your research area, because that's something we don't see very much, and you would want to have a very specific conversation.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the question. Is Valerie, is that the end of the queue?
We have two more questions.
Okay. These two are going to be the last ones. So if you're not already in the queue, don't put yourself in the queue, please. Go ahead, please.
Our next question is from Sai Manoj. Your line is open.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I'm a research professor at George Mason. So my tenure track position will be starting from August 24th. So because I'll be continuing in the same university, same department and everything, so will I be eligible for applying for CRII this year?
No, because you were not in an eligible. Well, wait a second. What were you in the prior to August 24th? What are you today?
Research assistant professor.
Research assistant professors are eligible. So you would apply under the rules for a research assistant professor. So yes, I'm sorry. You would be eligible. I thought you were saying you were going from being a student to being a professor.
What I thought he said.
So because you're going from a research assistant professor to an assistant professor, that's fine. You're eligible.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my question. Thanks.
Okay.
Last question.
Last but not least.
Our next question comes from Wen J. Cha. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a question regarding, so I found that in one of the previously funded projects, CRII projects, and I found that the topic is very similar to what I am planning to submit. So the question is, will that affect the proposal to be accepted negatively?
I wouldn't say that the fact that it's in a related area is a problem. I think our question is what you're proposing novel? If it is related to an earlier award that we've made but not but it's significantly different. It's just like any other research proposals. I mean, we have, you know, hundreds of proposals in the field of security. That doesn't mean you can't propose something new in security. You just have to show that what you're doing is different. So that would be relevant to show how what you're doing is different from what they're accomplishing. But we don't have a quota that we say no more than three proposals or no more than one proposal in any given area. We're looking for the best research ideas.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for all your terrific questions. I enjoy doing this, and I look forward to seeing your proposals, as I'm sure all the program officers do. I also want to thank Valerie for helping us on the phone for the past hour and a half. And with that, I think we'll sign off.
This now concludes today's conference. All lines may disconnect at this time.